My guest is Mark Halliday. He's one of five new poets chosen for publication in the National Poetry Series, a collaborative project of five leading publishing houses. Mark Halliday writes in a colloquial style. He's been influenced by popular culture and rock and roll, as well as by other poets. The title poem from his collection, Little Star, was inspired by this 1958 hit record by The Elegants.
Where are you, little star?
Little Star. 1. Little Star by The Elegants, 1958, is one of those perfect early rock pop songs that radiate confidence in a few orderly truths. Above all, if you have the right girl as your girlfriend, you know, the one who walks that way and tosses her hair, the one who dances just a little between cheers at the football game, if you've got her, you're golden. There's nothing else you could wish for. Oh, God, do you remember the golden liquidity of the lead singer's voice as he expresses this shapely truth? He could get it across without needing to rely on the mere meanings of words. He could do everything with golden syllables. Who was he? Can anybody tell me the name of the lead singer for The Elegants? In view of that grand confidence, it would seem a name worth preserving. Really, if you can give me his name, I'll give you $6. I thought of offering 10, but that seems more than I can afford, especially since his name may be fairly easy to discover. $5 nowadays seems paltry, so I'm offering 6. 2. This is not the first time I've tried to get a rock and roll song into a poem, and it won't be the last. It is my need to call out, "This counts too." I don't deny Homer or Virgil or Dante. I'll take your word for it about Bach and Beethoven. I don't question the importance of the Bible, though it never lived in my life. I love Shakespeare and admire Milton as much as you do. But our lives go on in these years, 1958, 1959, 1960, the 60s, and still on in these years like 1977, and still on now, as I write this in September 1980, with the sun bright almost as if new. And we are small. We are postmodern and small, but not therefore worthless. So it is for our sake that I try to insist upon the wafer-thin, golden value of a certain addition to the long, long, over-talented symphony of culture. Of course, it's no match for some hundreds or even thousands of novels, poems, operas, etc. we could name, nor for 50 rock songs I could name. But I want to say this also was not nothing. 3. Where is he now? The Elegants would be in their 40s now. Is he a vice president of Arista Records? Is he a wise, quiet junkie on the Lower East Side? Is he dead? Killed by something that golden syllables can't fix? Or maybe at this moment he sits with another elegant in a Pizza Hut in L.A. planning the impossible comeback. If you can let me know where he is, I'll send him a fan letter. The unforeseeability of this gesture would make me feel, at least for a day, that a million debts were paid. However, the $6 will be yours for no information more than his name. His name. The point is just to make it true that someone 22 years after a small fact of art can unexpectedly pause and say, "This man sang lead on Little Star."
Did you ever find out the answer to the question, who sang lead on Little Star?
I did find it out. In fact, I have to confess I found it out quite a long time ago. I wrote the poem in 1980. It was published in a small press book in 1981, and right around that time I was informed that the lead singer of The Elegants was a man named Vito Piccone. The Elegants were an Italian group from Staten Island, and Little Star was their only real hit. So I paid the $6, and I kind of thought that maybe I'd written a poem that could never be published again, because I didn't want the gesture in the poem to seem fake. I've included Vito Piccone's name in the acknowledgments page of the book among people that I thank as a way of sort of tipping off sharp-eyed readers that I have learned the guy's name.
You use a lot of vocal group songs in your poems. And, you know, I always thought that one function of pop music was to express the sentiments that we'd be too embarrassed or too shy to express ourselves, especially in love songs. I wonder if you think in a way that songs have taken the role of poetry in putting those sentiments into words.
Well, it's clear that I have very strong feelings about the relation between pop songs, rock and roll songs, and my daily life. In other words, like most of us, I guess, who are anywhere near my age, rock and roll is very deeply in our minds going back to adolescence. So I don't know if this exactly answers your question, but often when I write a poem, a driving impulse is to try to match the evocative quality that I associate with some of these songs.
You know what I think it is, too, in some of those songs? The urgency of the people who sang them, especially like a group from the Elegance, an Italian group from Staten Island, probably working class, has all these dreams of great girlfriends, of making it, probably of getting out of the neighborhood. And even though the lyrics are really corny, like, twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder where you are, when you sing it with the kind of urgency that the group does, it starts to mean something beyond the words.
Yeah, I feel that about that song every time I hear it. There's a kind of desperate yearning that the guy gets into his voice.
Would you like your poems to have that kind of urgency that speaks to people the way songs always speak to us?
I have a strong desire to get through to people. Maybe most poets would say that. But I think I'm more willing to risk what many readers would, especially sophisticated readers, would consider banality or obviousness. I'm more willing to risk that for the sake of having an impact and getting through to someone and not seeming like just another formal academic exercise.
One of the things you're doing in your poems is writing in a very colloquial style, speaking in a speech-like way. Did you ever go through a period yourself where you thought that the poetry had to be more formal?
I think ever since I was an undergraduate, I wanted to write poems that were very close to my speaking voice, but they didn't seem very approved by the authority figures that I ran into or read. In 1978, when I was in graduate school, I met the poet Frank Bidart, who rapidly became then and still is my most important advisor and reader or mentor. And a big thing that he did for me was to give me confidence that a poem could be deeply serious while very colloquial and seemingly conversational in its tone and diction.
I get the impression from some of your poems that sometimes you're overtaken by this sense of futility as a poet, of describing things and of giving your take on things, knowing that there's thousands and thousands of other writers who are in their rooms describing things and delivering their take on things.
Yeah. Yeah, that can be depressing if you become conscious that at any given moment, I mean, right now as we sit here speaking, the typewriters are just going, you know, like a noise, the sound of a million locusts across the land clacking away. All those poems are coming out. And you can get into a mood where you're really depressed by the fact that no one will have time to read them all.
But obviously poems really do mean a lot to you, poems that you've read and poems that you write. And why does poetry count so much in your life?
Is it because I can't play guitar? Of course, there have been many, many poems for me that have had an effect on my life, maybe as strong. Yeah, I do think in some way as strong as the effect on my life that songs have had. And, you know, I've wanted to recreate that kind of effect, that kind of gathering of significance that I've found in poems.
Mark Halliday, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your poems.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Mark Halliday's collection of poems, Little Star, is published by William Morrow. Halliday teaches at the University of Pennsylvania. This is Fresh Air.